Got the overview today of deed. Is Commissioner Kramer, I saw you there somewhere. Is that your out of town?
Not today.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself, and you can proceed with your overview.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And in fact, I apologize. I was going to be out of town, and I ended up through a scheduling cancel on the other end. I'm able to present today, so thank you.
Excellent.
Members, thank you. What I will do today is give you an overview of the department. You'll find the presentation, obviously, in your package. There's a lot of rather mind-numbing technical detail in terms of some of the budget items, but at the same time, I'm happy to expand on this at another point if you'd like. Mr. Chair, I'd certainly entertain questions too if anyone would care to interrupt during the course of the presentation. Deed's mission, you'll recall, is a result of the merger of Department of Trade and Economic Development and the Department of Economic Security in July of 2003. So we're approximately 18 months into the merger at this point. I'd like to say I think the merger has gone very well. My own business experience is mergers take 3 to 4 years to really reach full maturation. And in this particular case, again, from my perspective, we're very much on track with where I'd hope to be. Much of the integration is happening between workforce and economic development and how we deploy those resources statewide. Deed is actually a very large agency. In terms of our state funding, as you'll see, it's relatively modest, but in terms of overall expenditures, reasonably big. In the next biennium, we will spend approximately $3 billion. The vast majority of that is unemployment insurance benefits for individuals who file for unemployment insurance in the state of Minnesota. The second largest category is the Public Facilities Authority, the PFA, that does bonding for wastewater drinking water. We're approximately 1,700 employees. We serve a variety of different customer bases, and I'll quickly step through those. Our customers range from individuals who have been separated from work through no fault of their own, or they're seeking employment, new college students, any number of people. We also serve individuals with disabilities. Both State Services for the Blind and the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation are part of our unit. We serve veterans. And our workforce centers serve what we would call the universal customer, that is, anyone coming in who is seeking job career information. So our workforce centers across the state, as well as our partners, act as a resource for anyone who is doing job search information. When we talk about our customer, though, we also talk about the employers of the state of Minnesota. This is a principal customer for us because we best serve individuals by making sure that as many employers as possible participate in the public workforce center system or the workforce system. And those businesses range from small entrepreneurial businesses that are just starting to the larger companies that we, of course, all know across the state of Minnesota. We work with them on trade and economic issues. We have our Minnesota Trade Office. We work with them on government services. We act as an advocate for many of these businesses in dealing with other units of government, most notably the Pollution Control Agency. We have a joint initiative called Minnesota BizNice that we launched over a year and a half ago that provides a 1-800 number and some services helping businesses navigate the permitting process and making sure that they have access to both our resources and our pollution control agencies in meeting their permitting requirements and also understanding the nature of those permits as they move through their own business process. How much time is involved, what are the steps, etc. We also serve communities, and communities are another part of our customer because from an economic and a workforce perspective, remember that just about every county, every city in the state has an economic development authority or someone who champions local economic issues. We also work with communities on infrastructure, industrial parks, as I mentioned earlier, drinking water, wastewater solutions. And, of course, we're trying to boost tourism. Although the Explore Minnesota Tourism Partnership is now a separate entity that was spun off as a result of legislation of last year, the two agencies, ourselves and Explore Minnesota, still work extensively together. Tourism remains a principal economic driver in this state. We want to make sure we're very well coordinated there. And then, of course, our final category is partners with whom we act on. And these include, most notably, higher education, so institutions of higher education across the state, Minnesota, MSCU, University of Minnesota, private colleges and universities, a number of nonprofits with whom we partner for both workforce services and, in some cases, economic services, the dollars we provide to them. Our individuals and our staff serve on a variety of boards, everything from individual chambers of commerce to economic development authorities, regional workforce investment boards, workforce councils, etc. Our organization, again, I won't go into this in detail, but my own business experience was to try and derive a very relatively lean, flat organization from a managerial structure. So it is myself. There's a performance policy and measures unit. I like to think of it as an independent, almost quality assurance unit that reports directly to me. And then four principal line units in the business. business and community development, unemployment insurance, workforce partnerships, and these are services we provide through partners, and then workforce services under Bonnie Elsie, where these are services we provide with state staff. And you can see that yourself. Disability determination, labor market information, job services, rehabilitation services, SSP, and then finally what we call statewide systems, the quality control for the entire system overall. We have a very broad set of services across the entire state. I apologize, this picture still includes, and we, through our own admission, found this out just moments ago, it still includes the Tourism Travel Information Centers, which are, of course, operated by the Exploring Minnesota Tourism Partnership, so not us. But everything else on here still reflects the services we provide across the state. Workforce centers, which are local walk-in as well as business services. Unemployment insurance, we have a principal call center here as well as a call center up north. Business development, regional offices, these are the offices that concentrate specifically on business activity. Small business development centers, these are funded primarily through the federal government, although the state also has a partnership here, and these are located at institutions of higher education around the state. They counsel and assist small businesses in entrepreneurial activity. By division, I'm going to step through the finances, again, relatively quickly, and then I've got some other material on our legislative initiatives that I'd like to touch on. As I said, relatively large division. This is fiscal year 2005, so the current fiscal year we are in, approximately $1.634 billion. You can see on the chart, unemployment insurance and public facilities authorities are the vast majority of our activity. And unemployment insurance, paradoxically, is a relatively small part of our overall employment base. This unit has gotten progressively leaner, faster, more efficient over the years, and in fact, we're undergoing a major technology transformation right now in this area, something called UITIP, Unemployment Insurance Technology Improvement Program, where we're bringing the state's unemployment insurance back-end systems, our data processing, the services we deliver to employers and individuals who are filing claims up to the 21st century. In terms of where the funding comes from, it's almost exactly two-thirds federal government, one-third state. And so two-thirds of our funding comes from the federal government, and a significant portion of that, particularly as it relates to what is called WIA, the Workforce Investment Act, so funding for our workforce centers, state services for the blind, and vocational rehabilitation, is increasingly diminishing because the federal government is handing out less money there. And that isn't necessarily anything that's happened under the current administration. I actually have the charts that will show you that for the last 25 years, in real dollars, not adjusted for inflation, we actually received less dollars today than we did in 1984. When you factor in inflation, we're down almost 42%. The new WIA reauthorization bill out in Washington, D.C. seeks to remedy this and provide some measure of relief for smaller states like Minnesota that have taken a huge hit. But in classical Washington, D.C. sense, they've limited in something called the hold harmless provision that will allow the total amount to any state to change no more than 5% at this time. We'd like to see that change. We're obviously working with our delegation, with Senator Dayton as well as Senator Coleman and the entire House of Representatives, our delegation, to see if we can make some changes there. I mentioned the principal divisions. BCD is Business and Community Development, Workforce Partnerships, Workforce Services, Unemployment Insurance, Public Facilities Authority, and then our overall administration that we use for the operation of the department. That obviously is our back-end services like human resources, information technology, finance, etc. Again, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to go through these numbers individually, so if anyone would like more information. What I'd like to do now is step through the individual divisions and show you some of their principal programs and where the funding is coming from. In business and community development, these are targeted activities that focus on enhancing the industrial base or the economic base of communities and employers across the state of Minnesota. So most notably, the Minnesota Investment Fund, where we make loans directly to businesses around the state. Small Cities Development, or as it is often called, CDBG, Community Development Block Grants. This is a HUD appropriation to the state from the federal government that we in turn administer and award across the state on a competitive basis, primarily, again, for housing and economic development. Small Business Assistance, Contaminated Site Grants, as many of you have received letters from myself or my predecessors on cleanup activities that have happened in your community, where the state takes on a principal role in assisting a given industrial park, given community, in cleaning up extensively contaminated land that, but for the state's involvement, most real estate developers or development companies would walk away from simply by nature of the liability. There's a number of other things in here. We have a number of pass-through grants. You'll see kind of towards the bottom part of this page, Center for Rural Policy and Analysis, Women Venture, MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association. and then our overall operations for BCB. It's a rather modest amount of money, approximately $10.1 million from the state's perspective, from the general fund, that goes towards economic development across the entire state. The three principal units inside BCD are the Minnesota Trade Office, which has two real principal functions. They counsel businesses in export assistance. They work with them on training. So they're reaching out to businesses around the state saying, if you're manufacturing, or in fact, if you're in the services business. One of the things that's been happening on a nationwide basis, and I'd like to tell you that in Minnesota's case, we are ahead of the curve. We recognize that not everything that's exported is a widget. It's not something that's made. Oftentimes, we're exporting intellectual property. Minnesota has a remarkable strength in environmental and financial consulting companies. We want to make sure those companies are exposed to opportunities overseas, or particularly in environmental, as the governor's trade mission to Poland and the Czech Republic showed this past spring. Real nice opportunity to introduce those company or those countries into resources here from a consulting perspective. So it's not just export manufacturing, it's intellectual services exporting as well. We also are seeking what is called foreign direct investment. This is particularly true in China. As the Chinese middle class grows and as those businesses mature, as was the case with Japan, as was the case with Europe before that, there is an opportunity for those companies in those countries to reach out and create partnerships in companies in the United States. Most notably up on the Iron Range, United Taconite plant, the former FTAC, is now, I believe, 51% owned by Leiwu Steel, a Chinese steel manufacturing company. A principal investment by a Chinese company that has put Minnesotans back to work. And in fact, recently they opened a manufacturing line up there that had been shut down since 1999, hiring an additional 50 workers. That sort of foreign direct investment is also good for the state, and we compete with all 49 other states in making sure that we are very visible to companies overseas. Business development staff, this is a very modest group, only approximately 7 individuals. They are what we would call our high-value engagements. Doesn't happen very often, but these are the large, very complex business expansions that happen in the state. These are companies that are already here that are growing. These might be companies that seek to examine Minnesota, and they don't operate in the state today. They're moving into the state. There are local tax issues, there are TIF issues, there's state assistance, there's training requirements, coordination with local or units of government. We concentrate on those from our business development staff. And then finally, community and business finance, the tools that we have available, most notably JobZ, to assist businesses and communities to leverage their economic base and grow their workforce and economic employers. Under workforce partnerships, several principal programs, most notably the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership.
Commissioner, if you'll hold on
okay.
a minute.
Wait till the question.
The commissioner offered to take them during the course of the testimony. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kramer, I heard you a minute ago, and maybe I misheard you, so I just want to get a correction here. Did you say that you part of your work is to help Minnesota businesses outsource their intellectual services?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. What I said was companies that offer consulting services, so an environmental company that employs Minnesotans and helps businesses around the world remediate contaminated sites or sells equipment that perhaps limits emissions on smokestacks, as 3M does and others. We want to make sure that those companies have extensive opportunities overseas to sell their services. And sometimes those services might be a manufactured goods. Sometimes that service might be a Minnesotan who now is over there, you know, acting as an advisor to that company, or that country, selling intellectual property. So it's a lawyer, it's an accountant, it's an environmental remediation specialist. We're not outsourcing any jobs. We're just making sure that those companies are aware that there are opportunities overseas.
We're exporting lawyers, Representative Goodwin.
Well, I don't hate lawyers, but Mr. Chair, Commissioner Kramer, so your company does not help companies learn how to get involved in businesses overseas, or in doing their work overseas, I should say, intellectual work. It does not do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't think I would be employed very long with my boss if my job was to help Minnesota companies export their jobs overseas.
Thank you.
We do not do that.
Representative Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner, in regards to insourcing and outsourcing, I mean, there's a lot of negative connotations for outsourcing, but at the same time, you referred to the Iron Range having actually something insourced. Do you keep track of that as well? And how do we fare as a state, what we outsource versus what we get back in?
Commissioner Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's an excellent question. And in fact, I was just on a teleconference with the U.S. Department of Commerce talking about their Foreign Trade Office beginning to more accurately track foreign direct investment in the United States. Much of it is by, I'll say, by hook or by crook, we learn about some of these deals. Obviously, the very large ones in the case of a United Taconite, where we helped the Chinese government involved in the negotiations. Representative Oberstar, obviously, was also involved. We know about those. In many cases, it is much smaller investments. It might be a technology process here in Minnesota somewhere, and that company is seeking venture capital or financing capital to expand, and one of their investors ends up being a European or an Asian firm or a South American firm. Today that happens, and oftentimes we don't know about it because it's simply locally financed. What we want to make sure is that we publicize those opportunities in a way that overseas organizations, their venture capital community, their investment community, as well as companies that are seeking partnerships with Minnesota companies, are well aware that we exist. Now again, and I know this is very much a generalization, but we're in the middle of the country. We're a long ways from the coast. Most Chinese companies tend to look at California, the state of Washington, as their entry points into the United States. And one of the things we're doing through both some Chinese marketing activities we're doing, enhanced partnerships with Chinese companies who are already here, is making sure they know that it's just as easy to get to Minnesota as to a California. But very much to your point, we don't track the numbers exactly, but it's something that at the federal level they would like to track a lot closer.
Yeah, you can proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Under workforce partnerships, the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership is the probably the state's premier training program. This is a training program, and you can learn more about it, obviously, on our website, but this is a training program that local companies across the state of Minnesota partner with institutions of higher education, and they work together to develop a customized training program specifically for that business that in turn generates curriculum that then that school, that institution of higher education, can offer to other Minnesota companies. The state pays half the training cost, the business pays half the training cost, and it is developed then and delivered through the institution of higher education. This is a very competitive program. It's also an extraordinarily good program. I've seen many of you at some of the grant signings when we work with Minsky, the U, Dunwoody, and others to deliver these programs and have a formal grant signing when we kick them off, and they are very powerful affirmations that our most powerful asset in the state is our workforce. This investment then is the state's way of actually creating three wins. The employee ends up with a greater skill set, which makes them more competitive in the job market. The employer ends up with more competitive workers and is thus presumably more competitive in the long term compared to competitors in other states or overseas. And finally, the state ends up with the win of both a institution, a higher education institution that has developed curriculum that can be offered to other businesses to benefit them, as well as an employer and employees who are more competitive in the long term. The State Dislocated Worker Program has both a federal and a state component. Obviously, the state component is a supplement to the federal program. We have youth programs, adult training. Employment Transitions is a relatively modest group of our operation. We assist the Department of Human Services in approving training plans for MFIB, the Minnesota Family Investment Program, as well as the Food Stamp Training Employment Program, I believe. So there's a couple smaller activities there. Workforce Partnership uses these principal functions to affect the quality and the supply of the state workforce. We work very diligently, and last year you granted us revised dislocated worker program legislation that very much targets this notion that when the state makes an investment in an individual in job training, we want it to be in a high-paying, good-benefit job career that has a career ladder for that individual. We don't want to invest in basic training that leads a person into a dead-end job where they're at higher risk of layoff. And so we use our labor market information data. We use predictions from the University of Minnesota and Minsky on their availability of instructors. And we try and tie this all together into a very strong program that focuses on good, solid employment outcomes for the people who go through the training programs that we have.
Representative Muller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I was just looking at the youth programs. Is that Minnesota Youth Program?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes it is.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I thought that, and I haven't followed, but at one time I thought we had twice as much state money into that as you show here. Is that
Commissioner Kramer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, remember this is fiscal year 05 only, so if it's, I'll take the easy out and say if you want twice the amount, let's just double it for the biennium. Mr. Chair, under workforce services, these are services that the department delivers directly through state employees. So our state employees, both here in St. Paul as well as in locations around the state. Employment programs, as you can see, 100% funded by the federal government. These are our job services staff that work with businesses and individuals. Labor market information is our unit inside the state, and you may have met over time Steve Pine, who's our director of the office. This is employment data, state local state employment, unemployment rate, labor statistics, average wage, etc. There's just an absolute treasure trove of information here that is useful for both individuals looking at career information as well as businesses. And we market these services around the state, hold a number of training sessions for local businesses, communities, and individuals. Vocational rehabilitation is for people with disabilities, independent living, extended employment programs, state services for the blind, and finally, disability determination services. You won't see us spend a lot of time talking about this. DDS is a unit of our department, but in practice, they are 100%, as you can see, federally funded. They're 100% contracted to the U.S. Social Security Administration to do disability determination for people with disabilities who are seeking Social Security payments. So on a day-to-day basis, in part because of data privacy, in part just because of their mission, they're part of our department, but we don't have a need to integrate them into the rest of our operations. I've kind of already gone through this. The customers that we serve are wide-ranging. Part of this unit also helps veterans. We try and work with individuals on two things. Obviously, from a competitive perspective, my sense of the public workforce center system in Minnesota is we have a tremendous asset. And the faster we connect job seekers with job hirers, the more competitive Minnesota employers will be as compared to other states that do a more inefficient job. And so we have driven our system to say job matching is very important, but also job quality. As people enter the system who don't have good training skills, we use all the training programs that I've already discussed to make sure that we bring them up to a level that they will meet the demands of individuals or job hirers who have need. It's interesting, in Precision Manufacturing Magazine, in the September 2004 issue, so just 4 months ago, they noted that in Minnesota today, as we have known, we talk a lot about the healthcare shortage. We have a significant shortage in skilled machinists, tool and die manufacturers, tool and die workers, quality assurance specialists in that area, and welders. And they said it is not at all unusual for an individual graduating with a 2-year degree from MNSCU in one of these vocational trades to have 6 to 8 job offers right now. And these are good paying $18 to $20 an hour jobs, typically union, strong benefits. We're actually working with MNSCU and employers to make sure that they know we can help steer individuals into those trades if they express an interest. The Public Facilities Authority, I mentioned, is another part of our unit. They provide loan capacity to communities. Again, many of you have received letters from myself or my predecessors announcing loans to your community. Primarily drinking water and clean water. There was a transportation revolving loan fund that was established several years ago. I don't think we're doing current transportation loans, and a very small administration. You'll note that this coming year, you'll see that the PFA is going to be asked to take on one additional assignment. There's been some discussion of meth cleanup for contaminated sites being a loan activity, and in all likelihood, we'll put that function here in the Public Facilities Authority. But that will be a very small addition to their staff. The PFA does bonding on its own, so we have our own financial authority here. We're AAA rated, and as we go through these applications with communities, everything is coordinated with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency as well as the Minnesota Department of Health. Mr. Chair, to close off on just the overview of our department before I touch on some other things, many of you will have seen the public workforce centers in your community. You'll have noted the partners who work with individuals with disabilities. You'll have talked to local economic development officials. Our vision is to fully integrate workforce and economic development, and indeed that is the charter that you gave us through the merger activity. It was recognizing that the strongest match we can make is those who seek to grow employment with those who seek to grow workforce. And the closer we layer those two together, the closer we bring partners like MNSCU and the University of Minnesota, as well as our other higher education partners on par, we will do much better than our competitor states. As I look at it, our mission is twofold. Obviously, it is a global economy, but it is also a national economy. And I believe our duty to Minnesota citizens and Minnesota's employers is to make our system as efficient at doing that job matching, as efficient at providing a quality workforce as conceivably possible, to the extent that we outperform our neighbors and we outperform other states. Well, as was earlier noted, while much is made of outsourcing, quite frankly, members, much of the outsourcing that happens in Minnesota does not happen overseas. It happens in the southeastern United States. Labor regulations are much more liberal down there. The cost of living is much lower. And when we talk about job outsourcing, if you look at major manufacturing projects that have happened in the United States, most notably car manufacturing or automobile manufacturing, the principal number of those sites have happened down in the southeastern United States. Our mission is to make sure that employers understand that the quality of our workforce is second to none, and that is a qualitative competitive advantage that they have in dealing with Minnesota citizens as workers as opposed to those from other states. We want to make sure that as part of this, we integrate with as many number of economic and workforce partners across the state as possible. And to that end, we've got a number of things on a procedural matter that I won't bore you with, restructuring our department so that we have many more customer-facing individuals who are working in the field rather than here in headquarters. To that end, Mr. Chair, I was also asked to do was briefly touch on some of the legislative initiatives that we passed in 2004 with your assistance.
Representative Moe.
Mr. Chairman, we have time for questions now.
Would you like to take a couple questions, Mr. Commissioner Kramer, right now before you go into the next step?
Two specific questions. Last year, Mr. Commissioner, the governor signed a tourism initiative, Explore Minnesota. Could you explain how there's a new funding mechanism, I understand, that will allow local jurisdictions to actually become involved in developing tourism initiatives in their area? Could you explain how that would work? Or do you want
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're absolutely right. Last year, the Explore Minnesota unit within Side Deed became the Explore Minnesota Tourism, and they are a separate state entity. We share some services that the department provides to them, HR, finance, et cetera, over a period of time until they can fully transition. But I'm afraid I can't comment on their funding because that's John Edmund is their director and is carrying that forward. I just personally don't know the intricacies of what he's proposing. On a day-to-day basis, we partner extensively with tourism because, again, for many communities in Minnesota, tourism is a principal economic driver. But as to their funding, I truthfully don't know.
Representative Moe, part of that will be gone over next Thursday when the tourism division Representative Howe's Tourism Division meets, and I think you're on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other additional question. There's under business and community development, you had contaminated grants that are awarded to municipalities who have untreated sites that would potentially be good business development sites. Would Superfund locations which currently aren't being cleaned up because of lack of funding in that fund be eligible for those funds?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely they would. Now, the caveat is typically a Superfund site, by definition of the federal legislation, is multiples of millions of dollars, and this is a rather modest amount of money. That being said, oftentimes we have participated on some of those Superfunds where the state has also made a contribution. This program tends to be much more site-specific. Superfunds, they're also site-specific, but they are extensive. Our program is a given site in an industrial park or a given housing development that had prior contamination. But there's no reason why we couldn't also participate, or in fact, if federal funding was not available and the Superfund site was of a size and consequence that we could fully fund it or fund a portion, we would absolutely participate. Now, one thing we often do is there's two types of contaminated site grants. There are cleanup grants that are physical cleanups of the site. There are also investigation grants. A cleanup site may be $1 million or a very large amount of money. An investigation grant might be $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 where they're hiring an engineering firm to look at the site, develop a remediation plan. I'm not aware of, but I could certainly see the situation where an existing Superfund site, perhaps designated some years ago, new technology has come on the market, new remediation techniques. The community applies to the department for an investigation grant to bring that new technology, that new knowledge to bear and investigate the site, and we would be happy to consider those and fund those if appropriate.
And I could contact your office.
Representative Moe.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you'd like to proceed with your next section, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I'm just going to very briefly, last year was a different year, I'm sure, for everyone. Two principal activities happened in terms of legislative initiatives last year. One of them is a technical nuance. I'm not going to share the whole host of things that we do each year and from the legislative specifics, but I'll share with you that we always do unemployment insurance. It is a very massive, very technical program. We have an unemployment insurance housekeeping bill every single year. There are four members, two senators, two representatives who serve on an advisory task force. I believe Representative Gunther is one of those. That bill is always brought forward as a bipartisan bill. Specific to last year, we had another piece of housekeeping legislation for the Public Facilities Authority. Again, this is our in-house bonding authority, so to speak. And we brought the language up to current 21st century standards. There's a number of new techniques in selling and marketing bonds that we wanted to take advantage of. The principal piece of legislation that the department worked with the legislature on last year is refining the dislocated worker program. This is a very good state program that does job training for individuals who have been laid off or discharged through no fault of their own. So a company goes out of business, or whatever the case may be. The state dislocated worker program is funded by the employers of the state of Minnesota. So it is not a general fund appropriation. It's a special tax applied to all businesses. We wanted to clarify that in the past there had been some, I will say, confusion as to what constituted good training investments. And without being crass or perhaps demeaning, we had people training as beauticians or hairdressers or barbers. But nothing against that as a profession. But in terms of state outcomes, these tend to be relatively low-paying jobs without good benefits, in many cases part-time jobs. And we wanted to make sure that there was clarification as to the nature of this job training should be towards those jobs that paid good, solid wages with good, solid benefits. We're in the process. That legislation obviously passed and was put in place July 1st of 2004. So we've got about 6 months under our belt. We're putting in place new standards and working with all of our partners, the workforce service areas across the state, to put that program fully into place. That was the principal piece of legislation. We always have some department housekeeping activity as well, but those were the principal pieces. I was also asked to comment briefly on proposed legislative initiatives for this year. While it hasn't been fully vetted, I suspect that one of the things we're going to bring forward is some new ideas and new concepts on incumbent worker training. I continue to believe on a personal basis, as well as looking to other states and our partners, that investments in workforce training, investments in the quality and skill level of a given Minnesotan individual, is one of the most positive, powerful investments we can make as a state. It helps that individual, it boosts their skill levels, it makes them more competitive, and in turn, the employer that hires that individual benefits from their increased skills, is more competitive, is more efficient. We're going to continue to look at ways to use limited dollars to invest in incumbent worker training through the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program, through the Dislocated Worker Program, and perhaps through some new ideas, but really looking at that as one of the core places where investments that Minnesotans can make through our tax dollars pays multiples of dividends. I was also asked to comment just briefly on things that are happening in other states. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to comment on Minnesota's economy as general. And one of the things that I've seen, talking to the National Governors Association and my peers in other states at various conferences and on teleconferences, is the recovery from this recession has been very different. According to Dr. Steve Hine, our LMI director, from a practical basis, this recovery is like no other. And I'll share with you why. As companies have invested in new equipment, and on a very positive note, investments in commercial and industrial banking, so equipment, buildings, and real estate, is going up. That's a very positive sign. As a company invests in state-of-the-art equipment that makes them competitive, allows them to compete with overseas labor markets, paradoxically, that equipment oftentimes is very automated, very high-tech, and requires less individuals. And so at the same time that we're seeing companies increasing their investment in shop floor technology, manufacturing technology, we're also seeing those companies need less workers. The challenge is the workers that they do need increasingly higher skills. And so on a nationwide basis, what you're seeing is more and more states working around this concept of incumbent worker training, or what some people would call employed worker training. Many of our programs help individuals once they've been laid off, and Minnesota has a grand tradition of doing that, as well as any number of other states. I'd like to think that one of the things we could do collectively is begin looking at investments in individuals and their skill levels while they're still employed. So when that company makes that investment in that new equipment, the individuals already have the skill level to stay with the company, whether on that equipment, perhaps in a different capacity, but raise their skill level up. And this speaks to perhaps the shortages today in manufacturing on machinists, welders, tool and die. Very skilled professions. These are not high school graduates. These are vocational graduates who make a lifelong commitment to go back to school on a regular basis to have the career skill set they need to be competitive. So again, nationally, you see a lot of interest in incumbent worker training. The other thing that's happened... I'm sorry.
Representative Goodwin.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Commissioner, but about that I want to ask... So my concern about that is that that is really what the job of a business to train their employees on those things. So are we stepping in with a little more corporate welfare here, and would it be means tested, or what's your objective in doing? I mean, I can understand the value of doing that, but I'm concerned about the aspect of giving businesses a free ride in that area.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would share your concern were it not for the fact that in the vast majority of these training programs, the business is required to participate in the training equal to the state or greater. While the statute, for example, for the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership requires at a minimum a 50% match, our statistics for the last 7 years show that on average, the state makes an investment in the 36 to 37% range, with the business paying the remainder. So businesses want to and will invest in training. These programs are designed not just for larger companies. When we talk about corporate welfare, the tendency is to think of the large multinational companies in the state. These programs also apply to the 5-person welding shop, the 10-person services businesses. And those are companies that, quite frankly, from a training perspective, an investment of $4,000, $5,000 per employee to use MINSU or another institution to that training might very well be beyond their capacity. By making this investment, requiring the business to participate with us in the training, I think we're making an investment not just in the individuals, but in the competitive success of that company in the long term, that 10, 15-person company.
Mr. Chair.
Sounds good, man.
So are you thinking about doing this in a way that would limit it to businesses, say, for under 50 employees, or what criteria are you going to use?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the current programs do not distinguish between the size of the company. They distinguish between things like how many people will be trained, what we think their rate of employment or their wages will be after the training. There's a number of criteria that are already set where we measure essentially one application against another. I'm interested in making sure that incumbent worker training in general is available to as many Minnesota employers and the Minnesotans who work for those companies as possible, and I haven't drawn any distinction between large company or small company. In many cases, it's also a notion of community. A large company in the Twin Cities might be a 3M, a Target Corporation, with multiples of thousands. A large company in, for example, Lancaster, Minnesota, where I was not too long ago, about 6 weeks ago, might be 11 individuals. But those 11 individuals constitute the largest company in town. The investment there, in many respects, is almost a more significant investment, because if that company goes out of business in a community of, I believe Lancaster is 360 individuals, it will have a market economic effect on the community as a whole. So it's difficult to say, should we allow this one type of company versus another? I think the real truism at the bottom here at the infrastructure level is incumbent worker training pays dividends in higher salaries for the individuals who participate in the training and a longer-term competitive success for the companies who participate in the training.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, then is there a criteria that the salaries increase by a certain amount or whatever that the company agrees? What are we getting back from the company in, as far as what are they putting in? I know how it'll expand the economy, or we think it will, but I don't want something like this to take the place of what businesses should already be doing for their employees, and that is training them to do the work that they want them to do, and if that work changes, train them to do that. And I understand your discussion about businesses in Lancaster having 11 employees and so forth. That doesn't mean that you still couldn't have a certain businesses with a certain number of employees that were eligible for this or preferred treatment or something, but because small businesses, of course, we know in whole certainly employ more people than corporations do. How are you going to do this fairly?
Commissioner, and as you answer that, are the skills portable? Can the workers take, is it something they can apply to other businesses that they might have employment opportunities at?
Mr. Chair, Representative, First of all, absolutely. The skill sets, the training that we like to approve are ones that boost the skill levels of the individuals. I should also add, though, that some of this training, and by the way, the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program was, I believe, originally, this is the training program you're referring to, Representative Goodwin, was developed by then-Governor Rudy Perpich. This program has been around for a long time, and the investments that it makes are not only in raising the skill levels of individuals already employed, but in some cases what we would call pre-employment. So at a very basic level, some of the grants go to companies in, say, for example, in southwestern Minnesota who are dealing with immigrant populations, or in fact here in the metropolitan area, with immigrant populations on working together as a team, barriers to employment. We're able to focus in on key barriers that, for example, I don't think a company would train. Were they to have a choice on hiring native English speakers versus Hispanic, Somali, whatever the case may be, they may well have done so. What the program like this allows them to do is take those individuals, raise their skill level. As they improve in their own work quality, the individuals, they gain transportable skills that will allow them to succeed across the state. I share your concern that businesses need to pay for training, and in fact, it's worth noting that with this program, as well as the state dislocated worker program, it's estimated that in Minnesota alone, well over $400 million are spent by training with Minnesota employers. This is an extraordinarily small amount from the state's perspective. These are employers paying for their own training. What we're trying to do is target specific economic development initiatives or specific communities, specific businesses that apply. And in the course of that, remember, also add curriculum in the institution of higher education, that curriculum can then be marketed and used to other businesses in those areas. When we do a, for example, up at Pine Technical College in Pine City, Minnesota, the state has helped fund several grants that have helped build what is called a DTC, a Digital Technology Center. This is a technology center that allows people to do, say, for example, virtual welding and virtual painting. The individual training no longer does painting using paints, creating fumes, creating a material disposal issue, using raw materials. They do it virtually using a 3D helmet and a wand, etc. So not only does it have a pollution control impact, it has an efficiency perspective, and in the course of doing that, Pine Tech now has been able to offer that services to other employers across the state, thus gaining the multiple benefits of not only less materials used, less pollution, but more efficient training. You can provide instant feedback through the technology how well somebody is doing. So many of our investments are very, very targeted on their need to build curriculum that then can be extended across the state.
Representative Gunther.
I think he covered the things I wanted to cover.
Okay, Representative Moll.
Mr. Chairman, quick question. Would this incumbency training be available for Iron Range legislators to train them to stay awake at committee meetings?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer.
Representative Loeffler.
You should take note, I'm going to be around here a lot longer.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kramer, you've talked a lot about how you're on top of, you know, kind of the current workforce needs, the emerging needs. You're working with higher education to try and match up those things. Could you address how you're working or not working with the secondary education system so that young people have a sense of what kind of good-paying jobs our economy needs to be successful? I know that a lot of high schools and school districts have cut back on career education. They've cut back on counseling. And I think the new emerging careers oftentimes are ones that very few high schoolers are even aware exist, let alone what they need to do in high school to prepare to get into those training programs.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's an excellent question. Today, through our Labor Market Information Office, we produce both an online document as well as a physical delivered document to all high school counselors and high school libraries around the state that goes through principal careers, not all, but principal careers in the state. It ranks them by salary. It ranks them by the educational needs and the individual needs in a particular field. It gives a brief description of what the person does. And then it uses that information, the information we have, to give a prediction of what that skill set looks like in the future. Will it be a fast-growing field? Will it be slow? Will it be stagnating in many cases? I can share with you that our own documentation has revealed that for those individuals who choose the profession movie screen projectionist, it's a rather dim outlook. So one particular field seems to be diminishing dramatically. To your point, one of the things that I would like to do, and we've been talking to the Department of Education, is this document invariably ends up on a shelf in a counselor's office or something like that. Our online version, obviously, is to some extent much more accessible. Anybody can access it, whether at the school library, at a public library, from their home computer. And we're trying to think of some ways we can much more aggressively promote that to high school juniors, high school sophomores, when they're beginning to do their own career exploration. I don't have an easy answer for you yet, but I share your thought that we have great career projection information. It's very useful and I think very worthwhile to get that in the hands of high school students.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I agree completely with what you're talking about. One of the areas that I'm concerned about is what are we doing in the area of minorities? I saw a study recently that Minnesota is the worst state in the country for the disparity in income between the white majority population and minorities. And I realize that part of that is not in the educational system, isn't necessarily in your, but a lot of the things you do coordinate very closely with the educational system, especially higher ed. And so both with regard to the education before they get a job and also once what you're talking about now, once they're in jobs, they're also a minority population is not getting the advancement for whatever reason,
yep,
into the higher paying. And what do we have to get at that issue?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, very good question. And I guess what I'd like to do is I'll give you three examples of things we're doing, and then I'll state my philosophy. In southwestern Minnesota, the Southwest Minnesota Initiative Foundation, Sherry Ristow is their president out of Marshall, Minnesota, has a very aggressive small business entrepreneurial program that targets Hispanic and Somali immigrants to open small businesses. They receive business counseling on banking, on insurance, on real estate, basic business advice, things that, you know, from a practical perspective, many of these individuals are unfamiliar with the need to establish a banking relationship and how important that is as a vehicle into finance, et cetera. We are participating in that through our small business development centers and some of our business specialists in supporting that initiative. Again, targeting individuals who may have come over to work in a slaughterhouse or animal agriculture, but who, like many of us, would say, this is my starting job, I want to move on. I want to move into a higher income. I want to do something else. By helping those individuals, we help them start businesses. That's one, think of that as a pilot that's going on. Second, the state, through the Governor's Workforce Development Council, used a portion of our what is called WIA incentive money. This is the Workforce Investment Act. By meeting our federal performance standards, states are granted a certain performance or certain incentive dollars, and the GWDC, of which I am simply sit on their board, decided to use that money to do special pilot programs for English as a second language for new immigrants into Minnesota. It's concentrating specifically on English in the workplace, recognizing that, again, one of the barriers to economic success and being able to move up the career ladder is not having a good command of the English language. And what can we do in the workplace, whether it's after work, before work, bringing in educational specialists and focusing on improving the English literacy of the individuals on the workforce. Also, as part of that, educating those individuals to the availability of career information, other assets or information they may have or they may have access to that they simply didn't realize. And then third, within the department itself, within our workforce centers, we have piloted with several businesses to introduce second language materials into our workforce centers, not just Spanish, not just Somali, but job search information, banking information, insurance information, so that when an individual does come into a workforce center, it's not just all in English. We want to have material there in Spanish. We want to have material in other language, so that those individuals have equal access, and as importantly, understand that it's there. I think for many of them, the issue is they simply don't know it exists. Overall, the concern is very, very well placed. One of the challenges we have, and this is not unique to Minnesota, it's a national phenomenon, of course, is as the baby boom generation ages out of the workforce, that is, as they reach retirement age and simply move on, we have smaller and smaller cohorts, as they are called, of demographics, of age groups, following that. And so we will have less people to supply the job market today than we have had at any other time in this country's history. To meet that need, we will have immigrant populations, I'm confident, are going to be a significant portion of meeting that need. And so it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that those immigrant populations are very well prepared to step into the workforce. And I think that relates very much to your point as a multi-agency issue. It is Department of Education with Adult Basic Education. It is Department of Human Services with the MFIB and other programs that concentrate on welfare to work. And then finally, it is our agency in career information, job training, et cetera, and making sure those individuals have the skill sets. Very much in tune with what you're saying, we have these three activities going on right now. I'm going to seek and challenge the department to reach out to immigrant populations in the state.
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, a couple things. Number one would be, and I don't know why it's been, but I know that within the metro area, a group run by Mike Tamale, I think it's Neighborhood Development Center, is considered the most effective that I, from anything I can find out, of helping what you talked about, small minority businesses going, and yet they've never been able to get funding from the state. Could you look into why that is, or if there isn't some? I mean, I don't expect to today say why or that they are going to, but I would think that judging by everything I can find out, they're pretty good at this. Second of all, I know you brought up the issue of training. I know that Hennepin Technical College has a program that rated U.S. Department of Education rated as the highest out of 1,300 new initiatives on training for jobs English. I would hope that, I know Representative Gunther was a co-author in the past, and when Representative Goodnow was in charge of the committee, he put it in his bill and got killed in the Senate, but I'd hope you would support those types of things. Because this is a serious thing that we have in the state when we're number one in the country in disparity.
Mr. Kramer. Chair, Representative, I'll have to talk to Mike because I know Mike Tamale very well. We have supported them, or actually, quite frankly, you have supported them through the Urban Initiative Board granted money to NDC, Mike's organization, as well as a number of other inner city nonprofits that do business support and business lending. And so NDC has received money over the years. Perhaps Mike would like more. And I would be happy to talk with him again. We also have worked with NDC most recently on his initiative to open a multi-ethnic food mart in the first floor of the Sears building there on Lake Street. And so the department has a lot of interaction with inner city nonprofits, and I will certainly talk to him.
Mr. Chairman, I just, maybe you weren't aware that there's been bills in various times. In fact, Representative Gunther was also on one of those to fund them directly because of their success. We can look into that another time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Did you have any more points that you want to make?
Mr. Chair, no, that's I think a relatively brief overview of the department. To be somewhat egotistical, I'm convinced that we've got the best department in the state of Minnesota. We, I think, have the best mission to help individuals, to help businesses, to help communities. And through our actions, I not only remain very positive, but I remain very confident that we will achieve superior results, not just compared to neighboring states, because quite frankly, I don't benchmark us against North Dakota or South Dakota, nothing against those states, but that isn't our competition. This is a world market, and as Representative Goodwin and others have noted, we need to be able to compete and make sure that on a worldwide basis, people recognize Minnesota as a superior place to do business, to live here, and to educate and work here. So, Mr. Chair, I'm confident we can achieve it.
Absolutely. If members would note in your packet, too, that the department provided a separate folder, and included in there is specific details as to your district. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'll start with the very last thing you said, which is details to our district. I'm just curious, Mr. Commissioner, was the... did you use addresses, or did you use zip codes, or how did you happen to decide? I'm just wondering how you track businesses in that district. That's one question.
Commissioner Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the data, this is a, by the way, Mr. Chair, thank you for bringing this up. When I joined the department, I asked if we could put together material that would help both you and your constituents demonstrate the services we deliver to a given portion of the state, a given district. And I'm very proud that we just recently announced and launched this activity. It'll be updated on a regular basis, probably twice yearly, with economic and workforce data. You'll be able to access it from our website. Much of the information is geocoded from zip codes, for example, on individuals receiving unemployment benefits or customers of vocational rehab or state services for the blind. Businesses are specifically by address.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I was wondering, because zip codes don't work for my district. I happen to be at the hub, and I have all these zip codes going out. And you do that for a district like mine, it just doesn't work. It doesn't really give me good information. Businesses, I understand that you're saying, are by address, and you can do those against the GIS available through the legislative map. Okay, that's good. So, for example, the business community development loans, those would be probably accurate. Yeah. Whereas the ones on unemployment insurance might not be, because that's by zip code.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we may have to investigate this further, Representative, in your particular case. These are the zip codes. This is the address recipient of the unemployment insurance. And so this is an individual. So it should be within the zip codes within your district. This should be accurate. But if it needs further data, we can certainly look at it with you.
I'm curious about that. I hope for the most accurate. But the other question I wanted to ask you was, when you were just talking about where competition and so on is, I know we have anecdotal information about outsourcing, but is the department in any of your programs tracking actual outsourcing? In other words, when a business closes, I know that we used to have, Mr. Chairman, we had, as part of what we collect the data on dislocated workers, we asked those companies and those workers were their jobs outsourced. And for a reason that I could never understand, that was removed from the survey questions. And it seems to me it's useful information. And I don't know if the department has put it back in any other form. And I'm just wondering if we do have that information, not just with dislocated workers, but, you know, any sort of exodus of business opportunities, whatever.
Commissioner Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will certainly look into that. Again, much of this is anecdotal, I know your challenge is very well intentioned. That is, let's eliminate the ambiguity and the anecdotal, and let's have true, meaningful statistics. In terms of the businesses that ultimately dislocate workers, that is, of, let's say, for example, rapid response layoffs around the state that we track very well, I can tell you right now the vast majority of those are dislocated as a result of expansions elsewhere in the United States, not overseas. Typically, though, and Representative, as you know, many of the dislocations are relatively modest, much smaller firms. Rapid response only applies to employees dislocated in numbers 50 or above. Given that small businesses employ the vast majority of not only Minnesotans but Americans, it's likely that since we're not tracking the smaller numbers, there could be a fair number of foreign dislocations, but I will certainly check into that.
That would be helpful. And
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, and even beyond the foreign dislocations, if they're going to another state, too, all of that I think is useful to us. Thank you.
Any further questions? See none. Commissioner, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate the specific materials, too. Seeing you later. In front of us is the minutes for the Wednesday, January 12th meeting. Representative Gazelka moves their adoption.
So moved.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? They're adopted. Next week, there's no meeting on Tuesday. Wednesday, we're hearing from Public Utility, Housing Finance, and the Historical Society. Thursday, if you're on one of the divisions, they're both going to be meeting simultaneously. I don't think many are on both, so except for me. So that's the schedule for next week. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.